Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. And from Florida State University, a preeminent institution. FSU license plates support scholarships for deserving students who enrich and contribute to our community, the state, and nation. More at fsu.edu/mytag. From the state capitol, WFSU Public Media brings you Capitol Report.
Lawmakers are heavily debating a bill that would ban sanctuary city policies, but what that means depends on who you talk to.
I feel like I'm flipping the channels on the TV set at night between MSNBC and Fox News.
A battle over which felons can vote and when they will get that right back continues to embroil state lawmakers.
You see, this is why society doesn't trust elected officials. Because they send us to here to do one thing and we do a totally opposite thing.
And for only the second time in recent years has the legislature rejected a public record exemption, and changes are on the way to state election laws. There are just days left in the 2019 lawmaking session. I'm Lynn Hatter, and you're listening to Capitol Report. A controversial bill that bans local governments from adopting or practicing sanctuary city policies is moving forward, but Regan McCarthy reports it comes with some new amendments.
The Senate amended its sanctuary city legislation to include a carve-out for state prosecutors and the Department of Children and Families. Miami Democratic Senator Jose Javier Rodriguez says those exemptions are important for protecting some of the state's most vulnerable people. He gives the example of a recent incident.
A Florida youth pastor is accused of forcing a teenage girl to have sex from August 2016 to February 17. The reason why I mentioned this is because, unfortunately, part of what was reported is that this Florida youth pastor used threats to call ICE, not just on her, but on her family, in order to perpetrate these heinous acts.
Rodriguez says people shouldn't be able to use the threat of calling Immigration and Customs Enforcement to victimize people. That's why he says he's glad lawmakers created the exemption for DCF. But he says legislation moving through the Senate still opens the door for people to be hurt and taken advantage of just because of the message he says it sends. And that's a concern mirrored by Fort Lauderdale Democratic Senator Perry Thurston.
This legislation, you're going to see more of that. You're putting a target on these individuals for people who don't mean them no good, simply because they're going to be afraid.
During a discussion on the Senate floor, Democrats gave examples of people who were afraid to report criminal activity or afraid to seek help when they needed it because they thought drawing attention to themselves could mean they would be deported. Longwood Republican Senator David Simmons says he feels deeply for the people who feel they've been treated unfairly. But he says the state is facing an unsustainable problem and something needs to be done.
This right here is the body that needs to have the debate on how to solve this problem, because when you have 800,000 individuals in this state alone, who are undocumented, then if the federal government is not going to solve that problem, then we need to take the steps that are necessary to solve that problem. And one of those is just this.
Simmons says the bill under consideration won't hurt good people who may have overstayed their visas but are doing their best to take care of their families. Instead, he says it focuses specifically on people who are in jail or arrested for committing a crime. The worst of the worst, as bill sponsor Sarasota Republican Senator Joe Gruter says. But Miami Democratic Senator Annette Tadeo takes issue with that statement, because she says somebody can be arrested for the simplest thing.
The bill sponsor confirmed that the bill applies to nonviolent offenders, because I specifically asked about what would happen if you had a broken taillight or you were jaywalking. I've had a broken taillight. I've been stopped. I don't think I'm a criminal.
But Gruter says an interaction with law enforcement doesn't automatically mean a person will be detained by ICE. He says just 15% of undocumented immigrants who are arrested have active detainer requests. Meanwhile, Bradenton Republican Senator Tom Lee says he's genuinely confused.
I come down here on the floor and probably for the first time, or certainly more so than ever, I feel like I'm flipping the channels on a TV set at night between MSNBC and Fox News. And I hear two different worlds talk about the same day in American history, and I wonder if they were on the same planet.
Lee says if the goal really is going after the worst of the worst, as Gruter claims, then he hopes members of the Florida House are paying attention.
Because they're going to get this back. And we have over a week left now. Just barely over, but a little over a week. And there's plenty of time for them to work with the sponsor to deal with any infirmities that may exist in this bill and to clean up any confusion that may exist. Because I'm seeing it more and more in the politics of our society, where people come here detached from the reality of what is in the legislation.
The bill passed the Senate 22-18. I'm Regan McCarthy.
House lawmakers recently spent nearly 2 hours debating a bill that would allow certain felons to vote. It's in response to a constitutional amendment supported by more than 5 million Floridians. As Blaise Ganey reports, a majority of the debate was focused on when felons would have their voting rights restored.
In a 71-45 vote split on party lines, the House approved an implementing bill that would allow felons who have not committed murder or a sexual offense to vote, as long as they've completed the terms of their sentence. But many have a different idea of what completion means. Plantation Democratic Representative Michael Gottlieb describes his definition.
The terms are complete once an offender agrees to and submits to the collection mechanism of a civil lien, and the sentence is deemed over and the jurisdiction of the court ends.
Gottlieb believes that's what voters understood completion of a sentence meant, and that the bill changes the meaning.
By this bill, you are adding terms to completion of sentence, and by doing so, legislating to the courts what the ends of a sentence means. That violates the separation of power.
But proponent of the bill, Naples Republican Representative Byron Donald, says there's no way to know what voters thought.
We assume what the 5.2 million voters thought when they read the ballot initiative, but we do not know for sure what each and every person of the 5.2 million that voted for Amendment 4, we don't know what was in their mind.
Donald says what's more important is not what's in their mind, but what was on the ballot.
Our job, to be honest with you, is not to be in the hearts and mind of every single voter that voted for it when we can't possibly have known what was in the hearts and mind of every single voter when they voted for it. What we have to do is look at the letter of the amendment. Look at the construct of the debate for that amendment and then synthesize what the implementing language is going to be. So there is no question and there is no doubt how the agencies of the state of Florida are going to implement this for the 1.4 million voters who are going to try to come back into the process.
St. Petersburg Democratic Representative Wingate Newton doesn't buy that notion.
That's politics. That's all it is. So when you talk about not knowing the will of 5.2 million Florida registered voters, I really don't buy that.
Minority Leader Keone McGee says this is why voters distrust elected officials.
You see, this is why society doesn't trust elected officials. Because they sent us to here to do one thing and we do a totally opposite thing.
McGee says when the sponsors of the amendment spoke to the Supreme Court, it was clear.
This language went before the Supreme Court of the state of Florida. And the Supreme Court of the state of Florida looked at the language with their expertise, not elected officials here, but with their expertise, and said, you know what? Those 62 words are perfect.
But Fort Myers Republican Representative Ray Rodriguez says during the testimony, the Florida Rights Restoration Coalition, who backed the ballot initiative, said felons would have to pay back fines and fees during the Supreme Court meeting.
The drafters of Amendment 4 went before our very own Supreme Court, and when asked multiple times if financial obligations, including restitution, fines, and fees, were included in the sentence, Multiple times, the drafters of Amendment 4 answered yes.
A Senate version awaits a floor vote by the chamber. I'm Blaise Ganey.
Still to come on Capitol Report, the state's tourism marketing agency Visit Florida may get a new lease on life.
The governor's office has expressed a desire to have it continue to go forward so that he would have the opportunity to make an assessment of his own of how unnecessary it is.
And lawmakers appear primed for changes to state election laws and restrictions on how the state constitution is amended.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by The Able Trust, dedicated to connecting businesses and workers with disabilities. Businesses are encouraged to recruit, interview, and hire talented and loyal Floridians with disabilities as they seek to broaden their customer base and reach all of Florida's diverse population. Abletrust.org.
It is Friday now. We are just days away from the end of the 2019 legislative session, and bills are dying. Sean Mulcahy here along with Ryan Daly, and I'm Lynn Hatter. Sean, a massive bill failure today with respect to a bill that would have allowed another public record exemption. Lawmakers are fond of those, but they were not fond of this one. Tell us what happened here.
So the public record exemption in question carved out voter information, phone numbers, email addresses, and physical addresses from public record, but it still would have allowed lawmakers and political parties and political campaigns to access that information. So a lot of lawmakers who were not quite so fond of public record exemptions in general objected to this. For example, Senator Rob Bradley really said that it was against it because he was against, you know, creating all of these barriers to public information. You know, Florida has a very robust sunshine laws, you know, giving the public access to this information. So it did get 24 votes, yes votes. It got 16 no votes. But the problem is when passing public record exemptions, it needs to pass by a two-thirds vote. And this bill failed to meet that threshold. And it's interesting to note here, we put that two-thirds requirement into the state constitution in 2002. We've passed 156 public record exemptions, and only two on all these years have failed to meet that two-thirds requirement.
This past election cycle generated a lot of grief for Florida. Florida once again made headlines, not for the ways Florida likes to make headlines, because of all of the recounts that went on. You had supervisors saying, we don't have enough time to count these ballots. You had issues again in Miami and places like Palm Beach, multiple ballots in multiple languages causing confusion. Lawmakers have really set out to try and address some of those issues. Ryan, what is happening here?
Yeah, there's a bill in the House and Senate that, you know, it's looking for some pretty comprehensive election reforms. If you hear Engolia talk about it, you know, he says it extends the amount of time for voting overall to about 40 days. So in this bill, supervisors can mail out vote by mail ballots. Currently, they can send out vote by mail ballots in a window of between 28 to 35 days. That's being expanded to a window of 28 to 40 days. And so for starters, it would move the last day to request vote by mail ballots from 6 to 10 days out before the election. Currently, that standard is 6 days to request and 4 days to mail out. So it would become 10 days to request a ballot and 8 days to mail it out. It also looks to allow voters to pick up an absentee ballot 9 days prior to the election. Another interesting move, it wants to move the date of the primary election from 10 weeks to 11 weeks out from the general. You know, we had some obviously had some problems with signature matching in this past election. It looks to provide formal signature matching training to supervisors of election and canvassing boards.
But Democrats don't like it, even though it has the support of the Florida Supervisors of Elections Association. The association has said, we like this bill, we need this bill. Why don't Democrats like it?
Right. So, I mean, to take a line directly from the Florida Dems, they say it curtails voters' right to vote. So the difference you have going on there is Florida Dems are saying that is cutting down on the time that you would have to vote. but on the supervisor of elections side. And I got to talk to Paul Lux, who heads the state supervisor of elections group. They are characterizing it as something that's giving, you know, more time for supervisors of elections to kind of in a safely get those ballots in. Another line from Engolia when he was talking about that current standard, 6 days to request and 4 days to mail out. He said multiple times that's playing with fire, because when you get such a tight window, the argument there is that you're kind of asking for problems.
And sure enough, we had those problems with the supervisors saying we don't have enough time to be able to turn this around and deliver to you what you want when you want it. Let's talk about, Sean, let's talk about these constitutional amendments. 11 out of 12 constitutional amendments that were put before voters, they passed. And lawmakers did not like that. They didn't like that at all. And so now you have something moving in the legislature that would effectively curb at least one of the processes by which these amendments go before voters.
Yeah, so there are three ways to amend the state constitution. There is by way of lawmakers voting on passing a joint resolution through both chambers, which then would go to the ballot. There's the citizen initiative, which this bill elects to change. And then there's also the Constitution Revision Commission. This bill that is moving through the legislature would drastically change the citizen initiative. It would change the way that petition gatherers are paid. So currently they can be paid by petition, and lawmakers don't want them to do that. They want them to be salaried. And it would also require petition gatherers to print on the amendment where the money comes from, how much of it comes from in the state versus out-of-state influence.
Another constitutional issue lawmakers are looking at, getting rid of the state's Constitution Revision Commission. Now, again, 2018, going back to that election cycle, we had a bunch of bundled amendment proposals. You had a ban on indoor vaping coupled with a ban on offshore oil drilling. What does A have to do with B? We don't know, but lawmakers are not pleased with the process. They want that body gone. What are they trying to do with it?
Yeah, so the first bill, so in order to abolish the Constitution Revision Commission, that would require amending the state constitution. So that has passed its first step. The Senate has passed its version of the resolution, which would abolish the Constitution Revision Commission. It's now going to the House. And if the House passes it, then it will go to the 2020 ballot, where 60% of voters will need to pass it. It's worth noting, though, as well, that the Senate has also moved with a bill requiring that this Constitution Revision Commission adhere to a single subject requirement. So we have both bills moving through at the same time and could potentially both end up on the ballot.
Wow. So, Ryan, you know, coming back to you, what are some of the next steps in the issues that you're watching?
Well, I wanted to also return to the bill itself. Another thing that it's doing in response to the 2018 election, and it seems to be obviously in reference to, in this past election, ballots getting lost, some of them being found in kind of curious ways. It directs the Department of State to draw up some clear rules when it comes to the chain of custody and transport of ballots. I guess the school of thought there is to keep it in hands that, there's some accountability there. And it also, in a little bit of a quirky provision to this, it decriminalizes the act of taking a picture of your ballot at your polling place, or the ballot selfie and posting it to social media and stuff like that. Neither of those, the bills in each chamber, Senate and House, didn't get a vote today. I know the House is taking that up, I believe, next week on Monday. So right now they're both on third reading, if I'm not mistaken. So the next step is to get those votes and then get it onto the governor's desk. But this bill would provide some pretty sweeping and, I guess, it, for the Republican backers of the bills, meaningful change when it comes to elections in the future.
So movements on voting and election. Sean Mulcahy, Ryan Daly, thank you both so much for joining us here today on Capitol Report.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Visit Florida may be down, but the agency isn't quite out yet. Its supporters and leaders are pushing hard to keep it afloat past October. If the legislature does nothing, the tourism marketing agency goes away under state law. House Speaker Jose Oliva does not mind seeing that happen.
A few million dollars put towards advertising a few different places cannot possibly have a direct correlation with tourism. The economy has a direct correlation, the types of attractions that exist here in Florida, the weather. There's a whole series of factors. Visit Florida is probably least among them.
Oliva has bashed the agency over past perceived sins. Questionable spending on celebrities like Pitbull and Chef Emeril Lagasse, along with bad contracts among them. The House Speaker says the state doesn't need Visit Florida and that state marketing can be done through other means. The House would only fund the agency through October. And earlier in the week, the Senate seemingly gave the death blow.
If Visit Florida is going to sunset, there's no reason funding it any further than that. So if the House will pass a bill to keep Visit Florida alive, or they want to send an offer higher than the $17 million, I'll certainly consider it.
Senator Travis Hudson says it's useless to give Visit Florida more money if a bill reauthorizing it does not pass the House. But now Oliva is offering an olive branch. Kinda.
The governor's office has expressed a desire to have it continue to go forward so that he would have the opportunity to make an assessment of his own of how unnecessary it is.
That's not exactly a ringing endorsement, but Oliva is leaving open the possibility that Visit Florida might live to fight another year, or at least to make its case to Governor Ron DeSantis. Now a look at what's coming up next week.
Here's a look at some bills awaiting passage in the Florida legislature. Religious institutions may get the okay to allow concealed carry permit holders to have a firearm on property. This would apply even when a school is housed on the property. Lawmakers may require Medicaid recipients to work in order to be eligible for managed medical assistance benefits. A bill directs the Agency for Healthcare Administration to request federal approval for the work requirement. Another bill would make more than 20 changes to Florida's election code, likely resulting in a fiscal impact to state and local governments. Proposed changes largely involve the handling and processing of vote-by-mail ballots. The Department of State would also have to provide signature matching training to supervisors and county canvassing board members. The Sanctuary Cities bill seeks to ensure that government and law enforcement agencies cooperate with the federal government to enforce, not obstruct, immigration laws. The bill prohibits sanctuary jurisdictions and requires compliance with federal immigration employees. A joint resolution would abolish the Constitution Revision Commission. If 3/5 of both chambers agree, the proposal to get rid of the commission will be placed on the 2020 ballot. The commission convenes every 20 years with newly appointed members to consider proposed changes to the state constitution. That's some of what's coming up in the Florida legislature. I'm Gina Jordan.
Governor Ron DeSantis and the Florida cabinet are heading to Israel at the end of May. DeSantis says it's part of his promise to be the most pro-Israel governor in the state's history. WLRN's Danny Rivero spoke with Lior Hayot about the upcoming trip. He's Israel's general counsel in Miami and will be joining the trade mission.
Has this sort of thing ever happened before?
Not at all. This is the first time, and it's a statement more than anything.
So Governor DeSantis says Israel has some technology that could be used to help Florida address environmental issues here, like toxic algae and red tide. What kind of technology or research does Israel have in these fields right now?
Actually, there's a lot of new technology based in Israel that is very relevant to Florida, both on the red tide and the algae. We are already connecting Israeli companies with local authorities in order to find which is the exact or the most useful technology for that part, but it's also for greening of oranges. This is a huge problem here. I think that this connection between Israel and Florida has a lot of potential, since Israel has a lot of agricultural technology based or knowledge.
Just a few weeks ago, an Israeli company launched the first ever privately funded mission to the moon from Cape Canaveral here in Florida. Of course, that mission unfortunately ended in a crash, but nevertheless, it was a pretty big milestone. How important is the space industry to trade relations between Florida and Israel?
I think it's huge, and it's very important, and not many people know about another bridge that we build here in this consulate between Israel and Florida, which is an MOU between Space Florida and this chief scientist in Israel. Every year, about half a dozen companies from Israel and from Florida are getting funded for research that is connected to space. Some of those research projects are so advanced that they will be part of the next NASA mission to space, which will be in the next few years, which means that both Israel and Florida together, hand in hand, are basically in the forefront of space research. And that's based on our cooperation.
While Hayot says the cabinet meeting is a symbol, it is still technically governed by the state's open meetings law. Whether this meeting in Israel conforms to those rules has yet to be determined. Finally tonight, survivors of human trafficking are divided on two bills in the legislature. Robbie Gaffney reports one may be weighing the other down.
I am a survivor of childhood sex trafficking.
Gabrielle Monroe is speaking out against a Senate bill designed to stop human trafficking.
I also was arrested in 2004 on the charges of prostitution.
Monroe is worried about a proposed Johns registry that would track anyone who gets another to commit prostitution or lewdness. It's a provision included in the Senate version of the bill, but not the House. While traffickers and people who pay for sex are meant to be the target, Monroe says sex workers will be the ones most hurt by the bill.
What's going to happen is the good clients that we have are going to stop being clients, and we're still going to need to eat, and we're still going to need to make money, and we're going to make riskier decisions with the people who are already abusing us.
Monroe says that those who abuse sex workers are rarely arrested.
I had a friend who died last fall because she could not report to the police.
But not every survivor of human trafficking has the same perspective.
When I was 12, I started being sold out of hotels in Central Florida.
Savannah Parvo is a survivor advocating for the same bill that Monroe is in opposition with. If passed, lodging and massage establishments would have to go through additional training to identify when sex trafficking is happening.
If we had a bill like this when I was being trafficked, I'd feel like I wouldn't have been trafficked as long as I was.
But SWAT Behind Bars' Christine Kane says that while additional training is good, the registry that would be created if the Senate gets its way hints at something more sinister.
This would force already at-risk communities even further into the shadows, subjecting them to even more violence. The language of this bill focuses on the clients of sex workers as a whole, rather than on the predators of minors and vulnerable individuals. Sex trafficking and consensual adult sex work are not one and the same.
For a bill to pass, both House and Senate versions need to be approved. Time is running out for the Senate version to be heard again. I'm Robbie Gaffney.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Ryan Daly, Blaze Ganey, Gina Jordan, Regan McCarthy, and Sean Mulcahy. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Lynn Hatter. Tom Flanagan will be back next week. Join us each night for more reports from the state capitol.
Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee. For more information about Capitol Report and to hear previous episodes, visit WFSU.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. And from Florida State University, a preeminent institution. FSU license plates support scholarships for deserving students who enrich and contribute to our community, the state, and nation. More at fsu.edu/mytag.